Well, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and learn about the veterans' homes in Minnesota. And we'll also meet the 8th Army Reserve Battalion from Fort Snelling. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Since the Revolutionary War and every conflict since, black service members have not only answered the call to serve, but have lifted the Star-Spangled Banner to great heights. Our flag is not one color, though the threads are made of the same fibers. Different colors intertwine to create a bold, vibrant symbol of inspiration for our nation. The Minnesota National Guard is much the same. The Guard finds its strength not only in its diversity, but in its ability to weave together people of different faiths, cultures, and races that share common threads, values, and love of service. In the National Guard, we continually strive to enlist men and women of all backgrounds. Our goal, to reflect Minnesota's diverse population in our ranks, is ever present. This is Black History Month. It's time for us to reflect and to celebrate those that paved the way toward diversity. A time to remember the black service members who stepped forward willingly to serve our country, to fight for our flag, even though our country wasn't willing to defend their rights. This is a time to appreciate diversity today.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The mission of the Minnesota Veterans Homes is serving those who have served by providing quality health care in an environment of trust, dignity, and sharing. And joining us now from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is Robin Gausted, Senior Director of Veterans Home Healthcare. Robin, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Robin, I know we talked to you at the State Fair a couple of years ago, but for our listeners, can you tell us about your career? How long have you been with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
Well, I've been with the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs for about seven and a half years, so have a little bit of history with the agency.
And you are now Senior Director of Veterans Health Care. Can you tell me what all that entails?
Well, right now, I manage all of Veterans Health Care for the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. So all five of our veterans homes, which includes our skilled nursing facilities, where we provide dementia and Alzheimer care, as well as our domiciliaries. And for folks who aren't familiar with the term domiciliary, it's really board and lodge. And so we have about 200 beds where we provide board and lodge services for veterans. And then we have a really well-received, very well-run program called the Adult Daycare Center, which really provides services for veterans and support for families, for veterans to participate in a daily program and service for folks to get a little respite at home and to provide some activity and recreational programming for our veterans.
Robin, when we think about the five homes in Minnesota, I think most people think about the Minneapolis Veterans Home and they kind of have an understanding of what that is. But I'd like to just run through the five veterans homes, starting with Hastings. We had a representative of Hastings up here last year and found out that that's a little different operation down there, and they have quite a few activities for the residents down there.
Yeah, our Hastings home is really a very unique program that provides a lot of recreational and therapeutic kind of programming for folks who, for the most part, kind of come and go from the facility. It's a board and lodge program. They can receive basic medical care, mental health and chemical dependency treatment, if that's required, as well as rehab and fitness kinds of activities and medical care. So it's a well-run, well-rounded program, and we have about 180 beds in Hastings, and typically we operate about 150 to 160 on any given day.
And a nice campus down there with some trails and a wood shop, as I recall.
Yeah, beautiful wood shop. Our veterans make wood products and actually sell them across the state and across the nation, including everything from flag boxes to memorialize folks' military flags and memorial flags, as well as making clocks. And a few years ago, we even made the boxes that the beauty pageants used to use in order to carry around and protect their crowns.
We're speaking with Robin Gausted, Senior Director of Veterans Healthcare on Minnesota Military Radio. Robin, can you walk us through the other four homes?
Yeah, and before I do that, I really wanted to take just a moment to thank all of our veteran service organizations and our volunteers. Without our veteran service organizations and the extensive volunteer work that we receive from our auxiliaries across all of those veteran service organizations, we couldn't do what we do. And so we want to shout out a huge thank you to those folks for everything they do for us. The other thing that I wanted to do is also point out that our greatest honor at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and at our veterans' homes is really to serve our veterans. We do have four other veterans' homes, and they reside in the Northeast, Silver Bay, out towards the central western part of our state, Fergus Falls, as well as out in Laverne, up by the Dakota border, and then obviously in Minneapolis, which is our largest home and houses about 341 veterans.
Are those other four homes, besides Hastings, more of the traditional veterans' homes that people think about?
Well, they're all actually quite unique. They meet the needs of the local community as well as the veterans and families residing there. And they're usually smaller homes. They're usually one of the most significant employers in the area and are a very integral part of the communities that we serve, as well as obviously the veterans and their families that we serve as well.
Well, Robin, are they generally full?
All of our homes are always full. Hastings does have some opportunity for some additional board and lodge residents and veterans, but all of our veterans' homes for our skilled facilities do have a waiting list. That waiting list varies, obviously, from month to month and year to year, but we do have a waiting list in total of about 1,000 veterans on our waiting list for our homes.
Now, Robin, my understanding is that the homes have all improved a great deal over the last decade or so, and I understand you've won some awards.
Yeah, actually, we've been very blessed. The governor's continuous improvement award is something that he hosts on an annual basis, and this year our Silver Bay home won a continuous improvement award from the governor's office for a great clinical care project to improve the health care of some of our behavioral health medical treatment and outcome, and we were very proud to get that award. All of our homes have actually won a national set of customer service awards, and those awards are for excellence in customer satisfaction in everything from dietary to housekeeping to rehab and therapy services to the excellent nursing care that our staff provides.
Robin, we've just got about a minute left in this segment, but it's that time of year again when the state legislature is coming back into session. Are there some funding bills up there in front of them for the veterans' homes?
Yes, there are. This year is a bonding year, so we're looking for capital bonding projects and support from the governor's office as well as the legislature. We're looking for capital funding for the overall repair and maintenance of our homes. We're looking for some clinic and activity space expansion in Silver Bay and in Fergus Falls. And In terms of the Minnesota Veterans Home at Minneapolis, if anybody has visited there recently, they know that the bridge coming off of the Minnehaha Parkway is closed, and we're looking for some bonding dollars to repair and get that bridge back into service.
So for our listeners out there, get a hold of your state legislators and make sure that they help provide the funds to keep taking care of our veterans. And let's get that bridge repaired so that we can get in and out of the Minneapolis Veterans Home in better shape. And Robin, we have to take a short break. This is Minnesota Military Radio. When we come back, we'll talk a little more about veterans homes in Minnesota and learn a lot about the Minneapolis Veteran Home campus. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. And the first segment and the second segment today, we've been talking about the veterans homes in Minnesota. And we were joined by Robin Gausted. And joining me now is Corey Glad, who is the Minneapolis Veterans Home Administrator. Corey, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, it's a pleasure to be with you today.
Corey, I think you've got a big job out there. That's a nice campus out by the airport. And can you tell us a little bit about it? How big is it and how many residents do you have out there?
You know, the campus is some 54 acres, and we have Minnehaha Creek dumping into the Mississippi, and that's where you'll find us. And we have multiple buildings across the campus, and we serve every day approximately 340 veterans. To do that, we need some 600 employees to make that happen.
It's a big campus, and it's a beautiful place, isn't it?
It's a beautiful place. There's some wonderful historical buildings there, and we're excited, too, about some new buildings that we're constructing here to improve the quality of life and care of our veterans.
Now, Corey, over the last few years, we've had the members of the Commander's Task Force into the studio, and they were talking about a project out there that was a three-phase project, Project 1, 2, and 3. And a couple of years ago, we had Commander Pancake in that same chair you were in, and he was pounding on the table saying, we're going to get that funding, we're going to get that funding. Well, it came through, didn't it?
It certainly did. Thanks to the governor and the state legislature and the Veterans Administration at the federal level, we're fully funded now to complete Phase 2 and Phase 3.
Now, can you tell us about those three phases of that project?
The second phase is actually going to be completed here in March of this year, and this will add a 100-bed facility. Each of our veterans will have private rooms with private baths and very generous common spaces for families and to visit their loved ones.
And then phase three?
Phase three will be completed in 2018. And that will add another 100-bed replacement facility. And so all of our facilities will be state-of-the-art for our veterans. So from a period of 2011 to 2018, we will have replaced all of our aging physical plants.
So as the administrator out there, you must have to keep your construction hard hat close by hand.
I've got it near my desk every day.
And I know Robin mentioned some things. There's some legislative priorities coming up, but one of the issues there is that the bridge has been closed. What's it going to take to get that repaired?
Well, we've got proposals, like three different alternatives that are being looked at by the experts. We're hoping that one of those will be selected, and the price of that project could be approaching some $7, $8, maybe even $10 million, depending upon which alternative they choose.
So while that bridge is closed, there's really only one access point to the.
There really is only one way in and one way out to our campus, and so we really really need this bridge back in place now, so that our visitors can gain access, our staff can gain access to the campus. Light rail, as you may recall, is actually very close to that bridge, and it really is convenient for many to come via light rail to our facilities.
Now, Corey, can just fill us in now on that Minneapolis campus. You've got a lot of resources available for our veterans to stay there. Mm-hmm. Anything from church services to haircuts to, can you explain some of that to us?
You know, we have the most comprehensive list of services of any skilled nursing facility here in the state. And I think I'm very much appreciate how we have a medical staff in play. We have two full-time physicians, three nurse practitioners working full-time, and we have psychologists on staff. We've got a full complement of professionals here to bring the best nursing services to our veterans.
And in case of emergency, you've got the VA Medical Center about a mile away, don't you?
We certainly do, and we provide transportation to and from our facility to the Veterans Administration's facilities, and it's a very convenient setup.
So is the light rail available for those that want to come visit?
It certainly is. It's a little longer route to get there right now because we don't have the bridge.
Okay. So they have to go in from the north end of the campus.
That's correct.
All right. Now, I know at Christmas time we had Chaplain Leaf on the show, but there's a couple of chaplains out there that service the veterans from every religion possible, don't they?
Boy, they sure do, and they do an outstanding job for us. We have a very active spiritual life going on in our facilities, and it's a large credit to both of our chaplains. And one of the things that some of our veterans may not be aware of is that we actually provide settings for funerals, if you will, to also take place on our campus. And that's much appreciated by many of the families that we serve.
Corey, I think I told you this. I had occasion to come out there for a service a few years ago and address the crew, and it was an amazing service. There were veterans there in their beds and the wheelchairs. They walked in, they got there by any means possible, and then after the service, we got to just go across the way and have coffee and cookies, and every one of those veterans had a story.
Oh, they certainly do, and one of my favorite stories is about a 99-year-old veteran who's a Pearl Harbor survivor, and boy, he's sharp as a tack, and he's a wonderful storyteller.
If you just take the time and sit down, they've got something to say, don't they?
They sure do.
Now, Corey, I know that you've got another special service out at the Minneapolis Veteran Home that I think there's only two of in the country, and it's an adult daycare. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, we converted one of our historical buildings and totally refurbished it to provide adult daycare services to veterans in our Minneapolis and St. Paul communities. This is a wonderful services because it provides respite to caregivers of veterans, and we provide not only the social and recreational activities, but we also provide some rehabilitation services to veterans that may need some strengthening or balancing work to help them maintain their independence at home.
And they cook meals on the spot, and they've got facilities for bathing. They can do anything necessary to give that caregiver a day off if they need to go to a medical appointment or go shopping or something like that.
Precisely, and the cook is so well known on campus that some of my staff will go over just to have lunch there at the adult daycare center.
And the adult daycare center is relatively new, and they're not full yet, are they? There are openings.
We do have openings. We have can serve up to 35 veterans on any given day, but right now our average census is around 20 or so. So we've got some openings. So encourage our listeners to come out and take a look at those facilities. It's a unique place.
And our listeners can find more information at minnesotaveteran.org. And we'd encourage you to call the Adult Day Center and go out and take advantage of that. It sounds like a great place to be, and I've heard kudos from that chef over there, too. Corey, we just got a couple of minutes left. Any final thoughts about the Minneapolis Veterans Home?
Just that this is a real exciting time. The leadership team and the staff are all pulling together to make a wonderful experience for our veterans and for our families. And if you haven't come and visited our facilities lately, I'd encourage your listeners to do so.
And in the spring and the fall, it's a nice place to just come out and take a visit and walk around. It's a beautiful campus.
You head down to Minnehaha Creek and pay your respects down there.
Corey, thank you. Robin, I want to come back to you. We've got about a minute left. Any final thoughts about the veterans' homes in Minnesota and all the great work that's going on?
Well, again, I wanted to just say that we owe a lot of thanks to a lot of folks that make our veterans' homes successful. And I would like to close by really taking time to thank the folks that work in the governor's office, as well as the governor and the state legislature, for all of the support that they provide us, not only just in terms of funding, but really the overwhelming support that the state of Minnesota, our citizens, and our veterans and families all provide for us to be able to operate our veterans' homes successfully. Our goal is that every day is veterans' homes is excuse me. Our goal is that every day is Veterans Day at the Minnesota Veterans Homes. And if you're looking for more information, please look to our website at minnesotaveteran.org. And you can spell out Minnesota and veteran, and so it's minnesotaveteran.org. So thank you for all of your help and all of your support, and Tom, for allowing us to talk about one of the subjects that's near and dear our heart today.
Thanks, Robin. And one last question for you, Corey. You've talked about you've got hundreds of employees, but you've got probably more than that in volunteers, don't you?
Boy, we certainly do. And we know that there are listeners out there today that are just looking to give of their time and talents in a special way. And our veterans could always use some additional volunteers.
So once again, go to minnesotaveteran.org and go out and volunteer or go out and take a walk around the campus this spring. I think you'll enjoy it. Robin, Corey, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
This is Robin Gausted, Senior Director of Veterans Healthcare, and Corey Glad, Minneapolis Veterans Home Administrator on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Coming up next, we'll meet the 8th Army Reserve Battalion. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Today's Yellow Ribbon Company Spotlight is Wells Fargo. They have committed over $50 million towards veterans programs. These include home donations for military families, financial education, and the establishment of a program that provides free lawn mowing and snow removal services to team members on military leave. Wells Fargo is proud to support Warriors to Summits, providing funding for the veterans' equipment, training, and travel. Wells Fargo has the goal to hire 20,000 veterans by 2020, which would increase their veteran team member population by 12,000. Wells Fargo has participated in multiple veterans job fairs, recruiting events, and resume transition courses by mentoring job-seeking veterans in local workforce centers and communities. Wells Fargo has been a Yellow Ribbon company since September of 2013 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet the 8th Army Reserve Battalion from Fort Snelling. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
Landlords hold the key to helping Minnesota reach the goal of housing every homeless veteran. We pay tribute to the landlords and property owners who are putting an end to veteran homelessness in Minnesota. We are looking for more landlords in Minneapolis and St. Paul who are willing to stand up and put keys in the hands of our heroes. If you are a landlord who is interested in giving your heroes a second chance, visit minnesotaveterans.org. Housing homeless veterans is only possible through the willingness of landlords now and in the future to open their doors to Minnesota veterans and bring them all the way home.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining me now is the commander of the 8th Battalion Army Reserve Careers Division, Lieutenant Colonel Warren Seymour. Colonel, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom, for having us today.
Colonel, can you tell me, you've been in the Army and the Army Reserve for a few years. When did you enlist?
I enlisted in the regular Army in 1992 as a finance specialist, and got stationed at Fort Hood, Texas. 2 years later, went to Officer Canada School at Fort Benning. Did 10 years as an engineer officer, active component in various areas around the United States. Then became a reserve AGR officer, combination engineer and acquisition. And up to this point, which puts me at 22 active federal service years, and I am now assigned as the battalion commander, as you mentioned, at Fort Snelling for Army Reserve Careers Division.
Colonel, I just want to backtrack for a minute. You said you were an engineer and acquisition officer. Does that mean you were blowing stuff up?
Blowing things up, yes.
Did you enjoy that 10 years, sir?
I did, and the soldiers did quite a lot also. We did that at Fort Leonard Wood, in Missouri for about 5 years. And, yeah, we did blow a lot of things up. You have the mine-clearing device, which is a Mick-Lick rocket, we call it, and it shoots about 1,000 pounds of C4 100 yards over a minefield, and then it explodes to detonate a path through the minefield.
Sounds like stuff guys would like to learn how to do.
That is one of the most exciting noises that I've ever heard when I'm blowing things up.
Yes, sir. Now, you're the commander of the 8th Battalion Army Reserve Careers Division at Fort Snelling. Can you tell us a little bit about that battalion and your mission?
Army Reserve Careers Division has 13 battalions in the United States, and they're broken up geography and for population density. My battalion, which is 8th, covers 6 states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and 4 other states that are the Dakotas, Iowa, and Nebraska. As in the National Guard, they have recruiting and retention within the same battalion organization. For the reserves, retention and recruiting are separated. Recruiting belongs solely to the recruiters, and retention belongs to my battalion. So our job is to re-enlist soldiers in the Army Reserve, to get soldiers from the Individual Readiness Reserve, the IRR, to come into the Army Reserve, and the IRR is filled with soldiers who have completed their obligation in the Guard, active, and reserve, to also bring officers from the IRR, to find new warrant officer candidates throughout the Army Reserve, and to find soldiers in the Army Reserve that are qualified to go to officer candidate school or officer direct commission.
Now, sir, I want to just see if I've got this clear. The United States Army is comprised of active duty forces, soldiers, guard soldiers in each state, and guard soldiers in the reserve. And active duty, I think everybody understands. Guard has a combined federal and state mission where they can be called to active duty and join the active duty and be deployed, or they can be called up to duty to do some state duties. And then the reserve is primarily federal responsibilities.
Correct. The Army Reserve is a federal military, arm of the federal military that has as you mentioned, the state has state responsibilities. The federal uses the Army Reserve to complement the active component, as well as the Guard does also when they're not doing their state responsibilities. So a federal reserve units, battalions, brigades, and divisions are stationed throughout the United States, and they have footprints. For the division organization will have footprints through 17, 18 states. One of the interesting things about the reserves are that a soldier that is in the reserves in Minnesota can get promoted and take a job in Wisconsin, Iowa, even Washington, D.C., or California if they're willing to travel. So the reserves are not limited by the state boundaries.
Now, sir, is within the United States Army, active duty, guard, and reserve, is there some ability to move back and forth between active duty, say, to the Guard, or active duty to reserve? And I guess a follow-up question would be, as we see the active duty Army being cut back in size, are some of those soldiers joining reserve and Guard units?
That's a very good question, Tom. There's been a lot of emphasis in the Army Reserve and the Guard with the drawdown and the active component force that those soldiers, officer and enlisted, that for whatever reason, due to the low density of their MOS or their current pay grade, the active component no longer needs them within the active component, and those soldiers want to continue their service. And so we've done a reach out to those soldiers to say that the Guard and the Reserve, and I support the Reserve reach out, to let those active component soldiers know that they can come and be part of the Guard or the Reserve to support the United States, and their career continues on.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Warren Seymour, who is the commander of the 8th Battalion Army Reserve Careers Division from Fort Snelling on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Colonel, as the active duty Army is cutting down, it would seem to me that you have an ability to capture some of that experience and give them a place in the reserve where we've still got those experienced soldiers there in the event that we need to call them back up and go on missions.
Absolutely. Obviously, in the active component, a soldier trains or gets experience 365 days a year. In the reserves, we have two battle assemblies, two BAs, as we call them, per month, and we have 2 weeks of training in the summertime. Or depending on the type of organization, it could be any time of the year. So if you have an active component soldier who comes with that great wealth of experience, to have them incorporated into the Army Reserve just makes that unit even more ready, as that soldier shares his experiences with his fellow reserve soldiers. As you had mentioned, there's also wonderful opportunities for Guard and Reserve to also go back and forth from each of their components as they find different opportunities in a different path of their career that they may want to follow. So if a person in the Guard would like to do something more on the service support, combat support role in the Army, which is very heavy in the Army Reserve, or if a reserve component wants to get into more of the combat arms, that is a heavy component in the National Guard. So there's plenty of opportunities for soldiers to continue their careers in either segment of the Guard or the Reserve.
And Colonel, you touched on warrant officers, and it's my understanding that warrant officers come from the enlisted forces. So do you try to spot experienced enlisted sergeants, whatever rank they might be, that might be eligible to become a warrant officer in a specialty that you're trying to retain?
Correct. There is numerous vacancies, almost hundreds, I would say, within the 6-state area that I support for warrant officers. And the warrant officers are a specialized officer, and they have to get feeder MOSs. So it would be a sergeant within a particular MOS that could only fill a particular branch of a warrant officer. And so our people reach out to find those sergeants that meet the educational and the experience qualifications and see if they are interested in becoming a warrant officer to, you know, take a different path on their career.
So you've got a lot of different aspects that you're trying to fill and recruit the civilians to become reserve soldiers, try to retain some of the experienced active duty soldiers, and try to spot the soldiers that make good warrant officers going forward.
Correct. To share a little bit of experience that I've had throughout all my time in the retention aspect of the Army Reserve is I come across many, many people that are between 70 and 35 years old, and 95% of the time, the common thread of their conversations are if they have completely left the military, they all have that residual thought of saying, I wish I would have stayed. And so we try to reach out to those soldiers that still have that obligation in the IRR and say, continue your service. You know, reach it to your 20, your 30 years in the service and enjoy the time. The Fellowship of Soldiers.
Sir, let's hold that thought. We have to take a short break. We'll be back with more from Lieutenant Colonel Warren Seymour from the 8th Battalion Army Reserve Careers Division on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking to Lieutenant Colonel Warren Seymour, who is the commander of the 8th Battalion Army Reserve Careers Division out at Fort Snelling. And Colonel, I wanted to come back and ask you a little bit. We've talked a lot on this show over 5 years about the Minnesota National Guard and the Reserve and the Navy and the Marines and everybody else. But is there any way to figure out how the Army Reserve units in the state of Minnesota affect the economy and what kind of job impact they have in the state?
Yes, Tom. The Army Reserve has 17 major facilities in Minnesota, which comprise of 111 different Army units, Army Reserve units. And the presence of the Army Reserve in Minnesota supports approximately 1,400 jobs and brings in about $100 million to the economy of Minnesota each year.
Right here in Minnesota?
Right here in Minnesota.
And that's just with their weekend activities and 2 weeks in the summer? And
correct. And the full-time jobs that are in place to support those 17 facilities and those 3,700 Army Reservists.
3,700 Army Reservists in Minnesota.
Correct.
I didn't know that number, and I've been waiting to get somebody in the studio who can ask that question, Colonel. So I'm glad you filled us in on that. From your contact with current and former soldiers, what's the best advice you can share with us?
Best advice. I didn't join the Army until I was 26 years old. Best decision I'd ever made, though. What I would share is the leadership skills, the communication skills, plus the job training skills, whatever it is, whatever choice that a soldier or a future soldier decides to make joining the Army, Army Reserve, or National Guard, is easily transferable to the civilian sector. All of my friends that I went to college with and that I grew up with, they see me and they say, "You just seem so confident. You just seem like you carry yourself so well." And all of those things that were put into me by the Army. Just being around people and leading people on a regular basis builds strength, character, and skills that really many times can't be duplicated in the civilian sector.
Colonel, since September 11, 2001, there's been a lot of guardsmen in Minnesota called up. We talk about them frequently on the show. How has it been for your Army Reservists? Have there been a lot of calls to active duty over that period of time?
The deployments of the Army Reservists are basically equivalent of the guardsmen. It has been truly a wonderful teamwork experience by the three components with the active Army, the Reserve, and the Guard. And even to this day, we still have Army Reservists that are deploying in support of operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other parts of the world. The reality is, last I checked, the Army Reserve is deployed in approximately 110 countries in the world to date.
Sir, can there be a single Army Reservist of those 3,700 that doesn't realize that when they raise their hand and join the Army Reserve that there's a pretty good chance they're going to get called to duty?
I believe that all 3,700 Army Reservists, when they sign that dotted line and raise that right hand, they knew what they were getting into to serve their country and to be patriotic. The Army Reserve soldiers, National Guardsmen in the state of Minnesota are some of the most patriotic people that I have seen, and my hat's off to them for them to serve and continue to serve.
And on those deployments, they get good experience and they get moved up the promotion ladder, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I believe due to the past 14, 15 years, approximately 95% of all soldiers, active Guard and Reserve, have served their country overseas. It's an incredible number.
And Colonel, we're just running out of time here. You've been in the Army and Army Reserve for 22 years. It sounds and looks like you've enjoyed the experience. There's young people all over the state of Minnesota who are going to be listening to this show this weekend. What would you have to say to those young people if they were considering a career in the Army?
I would say it could be the best choice that you've ever made. College costs, tuition are skyrocketing. The U.S. military provides exceptional educational benefits. Your Army recruiters will provide more information. But as I said before, my goal is to retain those that are currently in the Army Reserve. So there are hundreds, if not thousands, of great Minnesotans that have served their country for 4 to 6 years in the active Guard or Reserve, and they have stopped serving for whatever reason, and they still have a commitment to the military. And if they, at any point, they can change their mind and continue to serve in the Reserve or the Guard, all they have to do is contact me or one of my people, and we can get them in an Army Reserve unit of their choosing, doing the job of their likes.
Colonel, appreciate your taking the time to come visit us today on Minnesota Military Radio, and good luck with the retention of your Army Reserve soldiers.
Well, thank you for having me.
Lieutenant Colonel Warren Seymour, the commander of the 8th Battalion Army Reserve Careers Division on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the senior enlisted advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's great to be back with you again.
Sergeant Major, I understand that you had something called the Joint Senior Enlisted Leaders Conference that you just wrapped up. That's a long, lot of words. What was that all about, sir?
Yeah, we sure did. You know, I mentioned it last time I was on the radio program talking about different ways in which we communicate to the senior leaders across our formation, both Army and Air. And once a year, we get the opportunity to bring them all together up at Camp Ripley and have that Joint Senior Enlisted Leaders Conference. And it's my opportunity to share kind of the focus, the message, the theme, the way forward with our organization. And this year, we had a real special treat that I'd like to tell you about.
Please do.
So Rhoda Olson is the CEO of Great Clips. And she's actually the 2015 Executive of the Year from the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal. And we had the pleasure and opportunity to have her come in and really kick our conference off on last Saturday. And you know what the neat thing about it, Tom, is that, you know, here's a civilian coming in, addressing a bunch of military people, both Army and Air, talking about leadership. And wouldn't you know it, if the same things that is being preached in the civilian world translates right into what it is that we're trying to do in our military as far as developing our soldiers, our airmen, and creating strong leaders across our force.
I'm sure that was an interesting keynote speech, and she probably gave you some best practices tips.
Yeah, she absolutely did. And, you know, she talked about many, many things. But one of her quotes talks about how leadership is relationship building, trust building, generating influence, and inspiring people. And that is exactly what we have to do every single day to make sure that we as a military are able to accomplish the missions that are set forth. And it was a great treat. And you know the deal. You can preach certain things, you can talk about certain things, but until you can get someone with a different point of view, maybe a different background, a different perspective, to say the exact same thing, people hear it just a little bit different and then it clicks. So it was just a great opportunity and what a great treat for us to have her with us.
So it works in business and it can work in the military and all of those things that she was talking about, and you're working on build trust between the troops so that when it comes, push comes to shove, you can get the job done.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in our military, it translates right into the different competencies or attributes that we feel are extremely important. And those are the things that we try to live by. As a matter of fact, that list of attributes and competencies are the things she highlighted, and it's also the things that we expect all of our leaders to be, know, and do throughout our formation.
Sergeant Major, sounds like that must have been a great conference.
It was, well, in my opinion, one of the best ones we've had. So, I think it was extremely successful, and I'm looking forward to having this message continue to permeate throughout our formation. And as we continue to strive, because you know there's always room for improvement in every organization, even though we're very, very good at what we do, we've always got room for improvement, and that's why we do things like this, to make sure we're always moving the ball forward.
Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us again today.
You know what? It's always my pleasure. I look forward to the next opportunity we get to speak together, and I hope that you have a great day. And, hey, don't forget, you know, share a good Valentine's Day with somebody you love.
There you go. Thank you, sir.
Take care.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. We're just about out of time, but we have one mention today. If you're interested in serving those who served, the Minneapolis Veterans Home is looking for certified nursing assistants, health service technicians, and licensed practical nurses. Both full-time and part-time opportunities are available. Career fairs will be held at the Minneapolis campus on February 17th, 18th, and 20th. More details are available at minnesotaveteran.org. Interested applicants are encouraged to attend the career fair, tour the new facility, discover the benefits of state employment, and apply and interview for open positions. For more information on the career fair or to apply online, visit minnesotaveteran.org. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Robin Gausted, Corey Glad, Lieutenant Colonel Warren Seymour, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we find out what's coming up at Camp Ripley this year and meet the commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.